So I'm just going to talk over the swap that's happening right now. What's happening is that the lovely Kate is going to talk to us in a second. This is Kate Andrew. Her talk is called Marvelous Minerals, Brilliant Building Stones. And she works in the heritage sector and has a background in geology. And she's interested in how you make geology interesting. She works with young people and old in museums and around different parts of the museums and heritage sector to particularly, with regards to this project, make the stone, the geology of building stones, interesting to people. Because obviously the history of where that's come from, who mined it, who the mason that dealt with it, the people's hands that it's travelled through, they very literally build our surrounds, and it's an interesting thing to think about. Have I done enough talking? Do you feel good stuff? So I'm going to hand over now to Kate Andrew, who's going to tell you about marvellous minerals and brilliant building stones.
Hi, everybody. I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen today, so I hope you enjoy what I have to say. I'm going to start off with a PowerPoint, which is not very exciting, but then I'm going to move over to actually show you how the microscope works here. So I have a number of different jobs, but I'm here with my Earth Heritage Trust hat on today. And with that, I'm running a project. I'm the project manager for something called 1,000 Years of Building with Stone. So that's a project funded by the Heritage Lottery Fund. We're operating within Herefordshire and Worcestershire, and what we're trying to do is link stone buildings to the quarry that the stone came from, which is harder than you might think. So a little bit about Hereford and Worcestershire Earth Heritage Trust. We're effectively the geology version of a wildlife trust. So we cover the two counties of Herefordshire and Worcestershire. Now, those two counties are very, very geologically diverse, probably one of the best areas, Shropshire's the other one, in Britain that has the biggest range of geological history. So everything from rocks that are 700 million years old in the Malverns to rocks like, I have a piece here, piece of tufa here, which is probably only about 7,000 years old. So a massive range in terms of geology and a massive range of different rock types as well. So those are the things on the screen that we do. Hopefully you can see those, and I'm not standing in front of them. I am, aren't I? That's not very great. And this particular project started a year ago now, and this is what we're supposed to be doing. So we're there to raise awareness of an appreciation of local stone and kind of get people to understand how that shapes their environment. Because basically, if before the Tudor period, if you wanted to build a house, your choice was make it out of stone or make it out of wood. There wasn't anything else. So, and it's much easier to build out of stone than wood if you've got a stone source. So the stone that where you live will really, really shape the environment which you live in. And that's something that people have kind of forgotten about, because people assume that you can get stuff from anywhere, as you indeed you can these days. But even up until the mid-19th century, when the railways came to Britain, basically you didn't have much choice about what you could build your house with. Unless you were extremely wealthy and you could afford to move it a long distance. So that's the aims for our project. We're also in the process of creating a database to get all the information we're collecting together, and that's what one of my colleagues is back at base trying to do today, which is why I haven't got any technical backup today, because he's too busy sorting our database out. So in terms of what's going on in Herefordshire and Worcestershire, I want to talk about three main rock types and then show you those on the microscope. So these are some shots of an area in Worcestershire around the Littletons. And at that point, you've got a mass of stone. And I have actually brought a piece with me, retrieved from my rockery this morning. So it's a bit dirty. It's a bit wet on the back because I had to go wash it in the loo in order you didn't get covered in mud. So the buildings here are made out of blocks of this stuff. It's a limestone, a very muddy limestone, but it breaks up, as you can see, into quite flat pieces, so it's really handy for building walls out of, because it's a bit brick-shaped, basically. So you've got walls made out of, sorry, I think roofing slates made out of that on that big barn, and then the walls made out of this sort of stuff, which is a strange orangey colour, and this is a special, they're both sorts of limestone, and we'll have a look at that in a minute on the camera. But this particular area, there's so much stone there that you can afford to build your garden wall out of it. Now, if you didn't have loads of stone, you wouldn't have a garden wall, you'd have a hedge instead. So that's another thing about shaping places that's worth thinking about. I mentioned the really young rock and held that piece up just now. So this church here, which is not very far from where I live in the Teme Valley, is built entirely of this really lightweight sort of limestone. It's called tufa. It's really unusual because basically what's happening is you've got lime-rich water soaking out of a cliff face. Where that meets the air and reacts with moss, it actually precipitates and forms a really lightweight rock around the plant. So if you have a look at that piece afterwards, you can actually see the remains of the plants in there. Now this stuff is nice and lightweight, so it's really, really good for making vaulting. So in medieval times, the builders of Worcester Cathedral sourced this stuff from 12, 15 miles away, simply to make the vaults, because you could then have really impressive vaulted ceiling, but not very much weight in it. So another thing about rock shaping, what you can do. So two sorts of limestone there. Another part of this is Herefordshire, Ross-on-Wye. I'm not sure if people have been there. You're into the really typical red Herefordshire sandstone there. So the big building is Market House Heritage Centre. That's the that's in the old marketplace in the centre of Ross. The building on this side, I can't tell whether that's right or left looking at this way round. This one here, that's the old jail in Ross, so you can see the red sandstone used there. But looking further down the building at the bottom, it's been repaired, and actually it's been repaired in something that's not from the local area and doesn't look quite right. And then the pebbles on the ground in front of it, those are actually from the River Terrace, so they're glacial pebbles washed out from glacial action up to about 10,000 years ago. Now, this picture here, that's a church in Worcestershire, and you'll notice that here there's a very decided stripy appearance. So there's one line of red sandstone, and then there's one line of whitey-grey sandstone, and that's very deliberate. It's quite a typical medieval thing to go in for. It's got a bit messed up here because somebody's put a window in and knocked a hole out, and because stone is expensive, difficult to get, it wasn't thrown away. You reused it, but they rather messed the pattern up in the process. So if you're walking around about Worcestershire, do keep a look out for stripy churches. They're a particular local phenomena. And then this is a totally different building style. I hope you can immediately see that. This is Malvern. So in Malvern, you're working with an igneous rock. So that's a crystalline rock. Now, I failed to bring a piece of Malvern granite with me, but I have brought a bit of granite from somewhere else. And you can see very clearly in this, it's absolutely packed full of crystals. It's something that's started out life as something molten and then has crystallised. You can't saw that up into nice blocks like the things earlier I was showing you. It doesn't break into blocks, so you have to use this sort of rubble approach and then point things. But it's also no use for making actual window reveals. So the arches and the jambs, they're made out of the Cotswold limestone, like this piece here, which you can saw up easily. So that's a really typical building style for the Malvern area. So look out for that if you ever go to Malvern. And then some other igneous rock. This is the big picture in the background. That's actually the approach to Kidderminster Railway Station, somewhere I'm at fairly frequently. And those are sets or cobbles, probably from Rowley Regis. So that's another sort of igneous rock, but much more fine grained, something that's cooled down quickly so the crystals can't grow quickly, can't grow easily. So, and in Shropshire and Herefordshire. Another source of those was from Clee Hill. So that's the dew stone on Clee Hill, really black, shiny stone, really nice stuff. So as part of our project, we go out and about and try and do outreach to people and explain things to them. So this was us at the Three Counties Show last July, in a big marquee that nearly blew away whilst we were putting it up. We have a stonemason with us, Mark, demonstrating carving in the background. And then what you can see in the foreground is actually a mini builder activity that we've developed, where you can actually try building with little bits of these stone and see what happens. So in the basket in the middle, there's the Cotswold limestone, the orangey coloured stuff. In the basket on the right, there's bits of Malvern stone. So, and then you'll see the little walls that people have built there. They're using a bath stone for the uprights in order to keep the stuff together. So that's a real practical chance to say, well, I've got a piece of stone, I've got some mortar, which is actually made out of sugar and corn flour and sand. This mortar's so really sticky, but you can actually have a go at building things in miniature. That's another thing we've developed, and that worked really well. And then we've also done some real building. This was us at the Hereford Show in August when it rained all day and was absolutely horrible, but we did manage to build a piece of dry stone wall there from Herefordshire sandstone. So coming back to what I wanted to tell you about today, we wanted to do something about explaining what rocks look like in thin sections. So if you take a piece of rock and you cut it up, cut a thin slice, about a millimetre or so, a couple of millimetres, stick it onto a glass slide like this. You can't see that at all, it's completely see-through, and then you grind it down till it gets to about 2 to 3 microns thick. That is what in geological terms is called a thin section. And then this is a way that you can identify rocks really specifically, but it's rather complicated. And we wanted to kind of come to a means of allowing people to understand that and actually get some understanding and enjoy it, hopefully, and not get completely baffled by science. So this is us in our office, Elliot, my technical chappie, and Marie-Thérèse and her colleague Anna from Eek Boutique. So we did a demonstration, much as I'm going to do for you in a sec, about how to do it. And then they developed a means to interpret thin sections using batik, and that is one of the batiks that we made at half term last October at Worcester Museum. So we had a 4-day public workshop there. We had nearly 500 people turn up over the 4 days, and on 2 of the days we made batik. So we did one day and another one another day. And it was a really great way of interpreting what we did. Now hopefully at this point I need to whiz over to the actual microscope feed, and that could be a little bit tricky. So I might need some technical assistance here. So that's some shots of us actually in action at the museum, and we were able to project onto the end wall of the museum, that picture up there, what we could see down the microscope was 5 metres by 3 metres wide. So what that was actually represents about 3 millimetres by 2 millimetres in real life, projected to 5 metres by 3 metres, which is quite exciting, really. So I think at this point, hopefully, I get rid of that. And what do you think I should do? Go on that one?
I think so, yeah.
Right. What do you do after this? And then we did control. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to sit down now because I have to fiddle around with this. So this, what I'm showing you here is, first of all, I'm going to start with the boring ones first of all and move up to the more exciting ones. This is a piece of limestone. And what you can see there, this is just under plain polarised light. So you've just got light shining through. I'm using a magnification of about times 40. So there's a times 4 objective down here and a times 10 in the eyepiece. So you multiply those together to get to how big it is. And then I have zoomed it up onto the screen so you can see it much bigger than I can see. Now, this sort of microscope is called a petrological microscope. And it has what's the stage on it. So that's the bit that the slide's mounted on, turns round. And that might seem, you might go, well, that's so what? it also has what's called a polarizing filter. So I'm just going to flip that in. And I'll just focus that a bit for you. So this is, if you can imagine, what I've got now is I've got a filter. It's a bit like a pair of polarizing sunglasses. And then the minerals themselves, which is what you're seeing on the screen, act as another set. So as I turn the screen round, they change colour, because what's happening is you're as if you were lining up two sets of sunglasses, and at some point the light can't go through at all. So some of them go black, so that's called extinction point. So that when they go black, there's no light going through, and then they change colour. And you can see some really nice pale pastely colours there. That's called birefringence colours. And that's one of the ways you identify things. But what you can see underneath there is basically almost pure calcite. That's calcium carbonate crystals. And the stripy effect on there is the actual boundaries between the crystals, the way the crystals grow. And that's how I can tell it's calcite, because they grow not at quite at 90 degrees to each other, slightly off, and that gives that particular sort of hatched pattern there. So that's not a terribly exciting limestone, so I shall now get a limestone out that is a bit more exciting. So I'm going to take the polarizer out there. So that's just in plain light, and what you can see here is, it's quite tricky to keep it in one place. Right, this is an oolitic limestone. So you imagine a fragment of something rolling around in a warm tropical sea, and it's getting coated with layers of limestone on the outside. This is what's happening today in the Bahamas. That's what the sedimentary environment of the Bahamas is like. So they actually form things like little gobstoppers. And that's what the batik on my right is intended to be a version of that. So when you put the polarizer in, I think I might just increase the light level a bit. So there's various different bits you can fiddle around with to get different effects and get to see things better. So between the grains, you've got crystalline calcite, so that's forming the pale pink colours. And then in those ooliths, you've got something in the middle and then layers around the outside. I'm not sure if you can see that. And then if I have a scoot around, should be able to find that long thin going across the middle of the screen. That's actually a fossilised shell cut in half. And then, you can probably come and have another look at some of these things afterwards if you'd like to. There's also bits of coral in there and all sorts of other things. So that's that one, that funny shaped one. You've got an oolith in the middle, and I think hopefully it might change colour. No. That black bit is a hole in the slide. That's why it's staying black. I was hoping that I'd be able to tell you that was a quartz grain, but it's not, which is a shame, because some of these little things are actually coated around sand grains. So actually, well, if you can see in this bit here, there's some greys going, and as I turn the stage round, they're going from grey to dark grey to black. That one's just gone to extinction. Can you see that one there. That's very typical of quartz. So that's grains of sand mixed up in with this limestone. But if you look carefully at those, you can see those are individual grains, whereas if I also now get out a bit of... Yeah. So we're now going to have a quick look at an igneous rock. So this is the 700 million year old Morvan granite. When I was an undergraduate, I used to have to spend about 3 hours a week looking at slides, and I got really fed up with it. I hated it. But hopefully, it's quite something interesting and unusual for you. Now, the trouble with this is I can't see quite the same as what you can see down there, so let's see what we can see there. But what I'm trying to show you on this one is these are not grains. When we were looking at the quartz earlier, those were individual grains. What you can see here is actual crystals that have all grown into each other. And again, there's a lot of quartz, as you can see. We're getting the white, grey, black colour. But then in the middle here, there's a multicoloured thing. That's probably a bit of epidote, which is an igneous mineral. And then there's other things called feldspars in there, which are typical of granite. In the granite here, it's the white material. In the granite is the feldspar. So I think probably that's about it. So... As a result of doing our project, I mean, we did some evaluation for it, and one of the things that really encouraged me was a comment from a child to the effect that it was hard but really good. So we're not trying to do really dumbed down stuff. It is proper science. It's stuff that you do at undergraduate level, but by sitting and talking to people and looking at the actual rocks, the thin sections, and having a go with this themselves, it's not something you would normally see out and about, but it worked really well as a way of trying to get people to understand a complicated bit of science. And if you want to ask me anything else afterwards, I'd be delighted to have a chat and show you a bit more if you want to have a go in a break, maybe. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kate. In case you're wondering why we are using microphones, by the way, you can't hear me like that, but it's because we're recording it for the internet, so that's why we're using microphones and adjusting them occasionally, which looks a bit clumsy, so apologies for that. So next up, I'm just going to say, actually, if you do want to touch some rocks or look down a microscope, just find the person and ask if that's okay during the break. And also, we've got a panel session straight after Rebecca Kill, who's coming up now, where you can ask any particular questions that you have, and that's going to be chaired by, again, the lovely Jen Southern.